Hi, Carm Capriotto here, and welcome to episode 399 and the first ever installment of the Service Talk series, where we are giving you an eagle-eye view of the service manager's role, and here's a preview.
The disadvantage of being a former technician into a service writer or advisor is you overcomplicate things for somebody that has never turned a wrench in their life.
True.
And that could right there talk a customer out of purchasing a service.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, welcome to part one of Service Talk. This episode, recorded face-to-face in Buffalo, opens up my first service advisors panel to discuss their perspective, responsibilities, and challenges of this most critical job. Carm Capriotto here, and I'm with service managers Rachel Barraclough, Chris Johnson, and Nick Herberger. And thanks to John Constantine at Bison Fleet Specialists for the use of his conference room. Hey, I want to welcome NAPA as a sponsor of the podcast. Now, remember, my sponsors make the podcast free for all aftermarket professionals, and I'm proud to partner with NAPA Auto Care and the upcoming 2020 NAPA Expo. Hey, please join NAPA in Las Vegas, April 6th through 9th, 2020, to discover the latest innovations in the auto care industry. Enrollment is going on right now, so contact your NAPA store to learn more. Hey, I want to encourage you to go and watch the Carmcast I did on Wednesday, January 16th, 2019. It was all about scholarships. It's number 13, by the way. Our industry has so many opportunities for high school seniors and post-secondary students to get money to help their education. Applying is so easy. Now, if you want to help seed the industry and get our young people to get into and stay in our industry, please get involved. Hey, please go watch Carmcast 13 and get the link to download the scholarship poster. Then send it to your friends in education and encourage them to get it to their students. The place to apply is automotivescholarships.com, and the place to get the poster is on my Carmcast page, number 13. No doubt of the importance of the service advisor or service manager in your business, I thought it was time to start a new series with the service advisors. Now, as with every podcast, you'll get a chance to hear different perspectives on this most critical and important job in our service industry. And the essay notes that they are the hub of the communications triangle, technician, customer, and the owner, and how important those connections mean to satisfy your customer. Glad to welcome Rachel Barraclough, service manager at Amton Auto and Truck, Chris Johnson, service manager at Total Automotive, and Nick Herberger, service manager at Scruggs Automotive. Get the talking points, my guests' bios, and links to their previous episodes at remarkableresults.biz/E399. Hey, glad to have you in the ecosystem of perpetual studency for aftermarket professionals. Hey, it's Carm Capriotto on our first Service Talk series. And like I did the Shop Talk, everyone, I did it in Buffalo, live at Bison Automotive here in the conference room. And I'm thrilled to have three service advisors, service managers. What's the official title of the job here, guys?
Workhorse of the shop.
Ah, very good. I love that. And that was Chris Johnson, service manager at Total Automotive. Hey, Chris.
How you doing?
We also have Rachel Barraclough, service manager at Amton Automotive. Hi.
Hey.
Nice to see you. And then Nick Herberger, a service manager at Scruggs Automotive.
Hello.
Are you at the Alma store or the Transit Road store?
The Transit Road.
Very good. Hey, good to have you all here. I think it's important that we start a series here on the service advisor. And so thanks for kicking this thing off for us. I love your talking points. You know, we never start out one of these unless I really know what your level of passion is for the job that each of you have. And I saw trust, customer relationship, communications as three of the things that really creamed to the top and the things that you want to talk about. And some other things,
absolutely.
Too. Some other things. So this trust thing, it's big in business today, bigger than anything. Why is it so important?
People have a lot of options nowadays, so if you don't have the customer's trust, they're not going to come back.
People are willing to pay more money if they trust somebody. So that's very important. It's not always about the cheapest product anymore, even though it seems that way in this industry. But when you have the relationship with a customer where they know you're not going to steer them wrong. They don't care what you say. They're going to do it. So trust is super important in this industry.
So, Rachel, how much is this job going to cost? And is price a key factor? You just said, you know, trust allows us to really do the job right, quality parts, do everything, no shortcuts. Is price, you're saying the price may not be as much of a factor today?
I mean, it is, but, you know, most of my customers aren't complaining to me about how much something costs. The answer I get a lot of times is, you know, wow, yeah, it's expensive, but I trust what you're saying. I believe that these are things that I need done to my car, and you tell me I need it to be safe, and I believe you, I trust you. So it's not an argument about why is it so expensive. It's, I know I need this because that's what you told me.
Where is trust coming from?
Just building a relationship with a customer, not treating them as dollars, getting to know them, you know, smiling when they come in the door. I mean, just treating them like a person, not a sale. And I think that's really important too. And sometimes you forget that, especially when the cash flow may not be there. It's kind of hard to continue that sometimes, but it's very important.
Why? Too much pressure?
Yeah, well, you know, if you, like, we're super busy right now, so I can't not sell a job if I wanted to, but when it's dead, it's like the hardest thing in the world.
Absolutely.
You focus on the wrong things. You stop focusing on the customer and you start focusing on the business and making sure the money is there, so your priorities change.
Nick, do you have a problem with that discipline?
I don't really feel it's necessarily all about money. It's the best thing that I feel is about this job is when that customer leaves, is when they shake your hand or they greatly appreciate what you've done for them. It's not necessarily like I said, it's not necessarily about the money. My number one thing is when I see a customer come back in for the second time, third time, 10th time, you start build that relationship with them where they're not just a customer. They're now kind of the Scruggs Automotive family. It's what I enjoy the most about the job that I do.
All right. So it's something that you're feeling when they come back that second time, be it a scheduled appointment or, hey, I was here, you know, a few months ago and this something's going on with my car. That sends a signal to you. Mm-hmm. And does that send up the trust balloon in your mind that the reason they're coming back is because we developed the trust on the first visit?
Exactly. It's when I present work to a customer, whether their car needs $2,000 worth of work or $100 worth of work, it doesn't bother me one bit when the customer tells me, no, I can't afford that right now, or no, maybe I'll come back. Because when I see pressure, like when I go into another shop and I see, you know, if I'm picking up a part from another shop, or I'm delivering a car to another shop because we don't have the tool to fix it, and I see another advisor that's very pushy on something, I feel like that drives customers away, and it puts a perspective in people's minds that all automotive shops are the same.
There's an image problem out there, isn't there?
There's a huge image problem out there.
I agree.
What are you guys doing about it? I mean, I know what you're doing about it. You're building trust and relationships with your customers. Yeah. And you're basically saying, you see this place that you come to all the time? We're not like all the others.
Yeah, that's precisely it. And you get to know people after you see them a few times. You know, they come in, I'm taking a trip somewhere. All right, that's nice. How was your trip next time you see them? That sort of thing. And you remember that sort of stuff. And you wouldn't remember that if you didn't care.
What businesses out there don't have an image problem that you could think off the top of your head? What profession?
I would say doctors, really. You know, if that's necessarily an image problem with them. I mean, you go to a doctor, you know, 99% of the time you're going to trust their opinion on what's going on with your body or, you know, whatever symptoms you're having.
And if you say, listen, I went to Joe down the road, you know, it was the only thing I could do at the time, you weren't open, he'll never badmouth any thing that other doctor may have said or done, and he now takes his shot at your problem.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. But I think a lot of the service industry is under fire, you know, because there are so many people out there, and some automotive shops will throw other shops under the bus, others won't. Yes. Sometimes for the right reason, though. I mean, sometimes something comes in and you're like, I can't believe somebody did this to your car. And, you know, somebody just buys a car, especially used car market, you get tons of cars in that come to us for like their first inspection, their first oil change, whatever it is. And you put it up in the air and you're like, you bought this car? This car needs to go to the scrapyard. You know, the frame's rotted out of it. All the ball joints are falling out of it. Things like that. And somebody still owes $5,000-$6,000 on this car they just got a year ago.
Okay, that goes to a great point about pre-purchase inspections. Are you all doing
them? Yes, we are.
Okay, and your customers know that.
Yes.
Well, we try the best, but
yeah. Okay, you try the best.
You can tell them you'll do them, and they won't listen. But
as you're building the relationship with the customer, and they become repeats, mm-hmm. and you're always concerned about retention, how do you communicate that? I mean, is it this code of ethics? Is it on the wall? Don't forget we do this. Is it constantly in a mailer that you would put out to remind people? I mean, it's got to be a key service you perform.
It's all about your actions and how you speak to your customers and how you treat, you know, they see how you treat your technicians that walk up front and, you know, you're talking about another customer's car. And, you know, you have a waiting customer also up front. You know, how you talk about that car is how what they think, okay, how are they really talking about my car, though, when I'm not here?
Wow. And Nick, you just brought up this huge, huge thing. We did a show a few weeks ago, digital vehicle inspections and the photo taking of the pictures. And one of the discussion points that came up was the concept was be the boss. If you're going to take a picture, no trash can, no dirty rags, making sure that the picture's framed very, very professionally. In your point is, you know, you could take a really good looking picture, but if your words to the tech who came up, you weren't having good dialogue, just like good picture, that's an impression, a negative one.
Correct. That's a number one thing that, you know, it's being in such a small shop that transit is my bays are right outside my door for my waiting room in my office. So when
I hear everything,
out of their mouths, whether they're talking about, you know, what they ate for dinner all the way to, you know, this darn car, I can't, you know, I'm holding back some French here, but, you know, you can hear every single word that comes out of their mouth. So if I hear any vulgar comments or anything, the first thing I'll do is come out that door, especially if I have a customer up front, and I'll stop that.
In the early days of my career, this happened to me. I will share this for the first time after almost 3.5 years in business. I was speaking something wrong about someone, and I had my customer on the phone. It was a very important, very big customer, and I never put that customer on hold while I was discussing something else. And I lost that customer who was on the phone. It was my number one biggest customer. And that customer said, if you're going to say things like you said about him, what are you saying about me? And in concept, it hit me so hard. It was one of those life-changing moments that I can remember it, you know, maybe 30-some years later, that I came up with a concept, and it was called Don't Think Out Loud.
That's good advice. That's very good advice. You do have to be careful. Every once in a while, you're going to have an upset customer in your waiting room, and you need to handle that the right way. You need to be polite, and you need to explain things, because there's other people sitting up there, and they need to see what's going on, too. And a lot of times, you can't please everybody. It's just a fact of life. You know, and sometimes a customer will leave a little unhappy, but
Why would you let a customer leave unhappy, though?
Yeah. Some people are just unpleasable. Some people just don't understand the concept that things need to be repaired, and things are different than they used to be. You know, a tune-up used to be done every 30,000 miles, and it cost $300. Now it's done every 100,000 miles, but it costs $800. And people are like, well, why does this cost so much? I can buy the spark plugs myself for $20. And it's like, I understand that, but if you want me to perform the service the right way, it's going to cost us much money. And, you know, and some people just, they aren't having it.
They don't get your value story either.
Yeah. They just don't understand. And you try and explain it to them. You can't compare what your car used to cost 20 years ago to what car costs today. The technology's infinitely different, you know.
How would you solve that, Nick?
Give me a scenario to work with.
There it is. That's exact one. Are you kidding me? The tune-up's $800 today. I'll go buy the plugs.
You explain to them that you know, your processes of what has to happen and why. Not necessarily, it's not the cost factor. You know, when a customer is at that point where they can't afford it, you just move on. You know, you don't, and if it needs to be done, like if there's a drivability concern or a, you know, any concern with the engine that you need to do this tune up where they got misfires, they have, you know, lack of power.
How about you, Rachel?
Well, first you definitely want to try to explain the value of everything that you're doing to a customer, especially if they're giving you a hard time. I mean, some people, there is a window of people that just don't care. They're looking for the cheapest everything. They don't care about anything. But you want to explain to them, you know, your warranty and why you know, time frame. You know, if you get your parts yourself, which we don't do customer supply parts, but, you know, if you were, you know, I got to wait for you to go get the parts. I got to wait for you to go leave where you are, go get the parts, come
but
to
that's
me.
Not, and, that's not an effective story today, you know, really, is it?
You'd be surprised. You'd be absolutely surprised.
Because they just want to be convinced that what you're going to do is convenient for them.
Yeah. You know,
I went to AutoZone and I got the code red and it's an O2 sensor and I went and bought it right there. And can you put this in for me? No, of course not.
Remarkable Results Radio and Napa Auto Care. No, the auto care industry is revving up. New technologies are changing cars and the way people use them. To stay in the driver's seat of all these advancements, you need to take charge of your learning, your business, and your legacy. Now, that's where 2020 Napa Expo comes in. With help from industry experts and the best suppliers and manufacturers, the 2020 Napa Expo will provide the innovations and answers you need to charge forward into the future. This is your chance to network with experts in the industry, discover the latest innovations that will help you stay market competitive, and learn more about the new products, services, and equipment you'll soon be using every day. Hey, if you missed this one-of-a-kind event in 2015, I'm here to tell you, you don't want to miss the 2020 Napa Expo. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here are a few of the comments we've heard from Napa Auto Care Business Development Group members talking about their experience at the 2015 Napa Expo. And I quote, "You learn so much in the seminars that our guys find it really exciting and say, hey, I can do this when I get back." Another quote, "Napa continues to bring new programs up for us to get to the next level in marketing, business management, and training." And finally, you'll come away with a lot of knowledge and friendships that you'll be able to leverage in your own business. Hey, take charge of your learning, your business, and your legacy, and join me at the 2020 Napa Expo in Las Vegas, April 6th through 9th, 2020. Hey, contact your Napa Auto Parts store today to reserve your package for this can't-miss event. Enrollment is going on right now.
The biggest thing I see is as a customer's vehicle that needs, you know, a substantial amount of work. Let's say it's, you know, it needs $2,000 worth of work. They might have $500 to their name. So you present everything all in one shot. Okay, this is your car needs this, this, and that. It's going to cost $2,000. You see that customer start to step back, put their walls up. You go, well, you know, you don't necessarily talk yourself out of the sale, and you ask them, you know, what would you be comfortable spending today? As in, you know, let's chip away at these things. You know, you might not need all these things right away. Okay, so we have, you know, let's get your safety concerns.
So critical need.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's correct your safety concerns first. Okay, that needs this tie rod in alignment. It'll be $250. And then, you know, down the line, we can do this coolant flusher. We can do this bushing that's just starting to separate.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about making the full sale right away, because that customer is going to come back and they're eventually going to spend that money with you.
Okay. Which is a difficult thing to make your technician understand sometimes, is when your tech writes up $2,000 in work and you only sell $500 of it, and they're fighting with you, and then you're like, listen, you know, you break it down for a customer. I mean, do you have just $2,000
exactly
laying around to put into your car? No.
Why is your tech getting angry with your advisor because they didn't sell work?
Sometimes, you know, because we do DVI. So, you know, a former technician, you know, would be upset if, you know, you don't sell safety concerns, and,
right?
You know, safety concerns, and then maintenance concerns, and you know, flushes, okay. And
all right.
Silly
so let's
like
do
that.
A timeout right now, because I think one of the greatest talking points is that communications, that owner, service manager, technician, and to me, part of the solution is that we are talking. I mean, so you have a weekly meeting as an example. I'm not sure you guys do or don't. And you say, hey, I want to bring up a great point. You know, Bob, you had $2,000 worth of work. They couldn't swing the numbers. So we got him into the points that you suggested were the most critical points. Do you have to wait for a meeting? Do you talk to the technician during? How do you solve and keep the relationship between you and the tech strong?
I mean, it's important to, when you sell what you sell, go talk to the technician and be like, listen, you know, they just don't have the money to do $2,000 in work right now, but we're going to take care of these safety issues first. Then they're going to come back in a month, a couple weeks, whatever. They're going to start doing these things. And once your tech sees that, you know, because you have this trust and relationship with the customer, you know, they are going to come back and they are going to do that work. And a lot of times it's a lot sooner than you expect them to. And it's just something that with the communication between everyone in the building, you need to make sure that everyone's on the same page.
Is he on flat rate?
He was, yes.
And he's no longer?
No.
So it's not that big of an issue?
Well, he's not with us. This particular one isn't
okay,
with us anymore.
All right. Okay. Yeah. But if someone was on flat rate and they saw that work, that was potential, you know, action for them. And does that get in the way of you not selling the job? If somebody was on flat rate?
No.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I was flat rate. I was a flat rate technician.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so
was I.
So if you recommended and the service manager couldn't sell it, were you upset?
No.
Okay. Because you figured if the shop was busy enough, you were going to get your hours.
Next one.
Yeah, next one. Okay, cool.
But I really like what Nick's talking about. We do the same thing where we will, if a car needs a bunch of work, you have to make the customer aware of everything their car needs. You know, and you say, let me break it down in order of importance. You know, let's address your safety concerns first. And then these are maintenance concerns, flushes and things like that that can be done at a later time. Hey, at your next oil change, we're going to take care of this power steering flush. We're not going to worry about right now. Let's replace your four bald tires. That's important for your safety. So, and that's how we pretty much break down everything that the car needs, but we put it in an order. That way they know what's the most important thing for me to fix right now, which is usually the concern they brought it in for. And then this is some other things that we saw for your car and you need to be aware of it. When would you like to schedule handling it? You know, your battery's testing poorly today. I don't know if it's going to start tomorrow. Would you like me to take care of it while you're here for your oil change? No. Okay. Here's the estimate. You know about it. You can call me when it doesn't start. I'll have you towed in. We'll put a battery in it. No problem. But I mean, the regular customers understand that and they appreciate it because it's important to, if you know that your car has a concern, you can budget for it, especially if it's not an emergency.
How many no's that you get are steeped in, I don't have the money and they don't want to say?
An abundance of them, I would say.
I'd agree.
In a way, yes or no, because you can always, you know, I don't know if your shops have that option to do a financing, you know, through a finance company. You know, you always, just because a person doesn't have money right there doesn't mean they can get it.
Yep.
You know,
do you guys have the Synchrony program?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have the same program.
Synchrony, Snap,
yeah.
You know, those are all, you know, great options. You know,
absolutely.
You don't ever push it on them.
So. Yeah, a lot of those programs are really good because it's 6 months, no interest on the financing, things like that. And certain customers just don't have that kind of credit, you know, but you offer it as an option. And if they want it, they'll take it.
So, Chris, the battery issue, you really recognize the battery's on its last legs.
Absolutely.
And they say no. Would you offer to schedule in 30 days? Listen, you know, you may be okay. Winter's coming up. Why don't we get you back in here on January 15th at 10:30? Let's do the battery then.
Absolutely.
Is that a different close, type of close?
Our program actually has, when technicians make a recommendation that aren't completed on that visit, it will set up a reminder for the customer. And the customer will get a reminder, hey, it's been, you know, whatever, a few weeks. You haven't had your battery replaced. Remember, we recommended it. You know, and a lot of times that will generate a sale. Hey, you know what? Let's get that battery done this week. No problem. Make the appointment.
What system are you using?
We are using Bolt-On.
Okay.
For that. And that has the tablets for the technicians so they can take the pictures and everything. And
are you guys all doing DVI?
Yes.
My shop has yet to launch that. My Alma store has. We are switching from Mitchell to Shopware.
Okay.
So that we have the the means
you'll have that. You'll get that. Okay, cool. Communication, but inside the shop, and you know the owner, this triangle of responsibility that you have. First of all, you're the center of that hub, I believe. Would you all agree?
Yes.
Did you hear how quick that happened? Okay. So if you're the center of that communications hub, what are your greatest challenges in keeping that fluid?
I think the greatest challenge I have as a shop manager / advisor is the flow of the shop, and making sure when you have that waiting appointment coming in, you have that bay ready to go or a car coming out at that time, so you could keep those customers flowing in and out as, like you said, the fluid. Basically it's just going to come in and out.
So are you assigning tasks, the jobs to the...
Correct.
So you're the shop manager and the service manager.
Correct.
All of you are the same?
Oh, yeah, and you switch the hat to the other hat. And then
okay, so you're doing the same thing. So you're building flow and you're dealing with customers.
Yep, and Nick's absolutely right. And it only takes a very small issue to throw that whole thing out of whack.
The whole spectrum.
Whether it's getting an incorrect part or a part taking longer than it should. Sometimes it's just a technician's recommendation. Hey, it came in for an oil change. It needs brakes all the way around. Customer's in the waiting room and they want it done right now. No problem. You're going to get the job done, but now you've extended the work on that. So now you need to shuffle around the entire rest of the schedule.
And you learn, and the advantage that you or I might have is we know the backside a little better than somebody that's never worked the backside. Not necessarily that somebody that has never worked in the back can't learn that, but we're already at that advantage when you come into that position. This controller and bushing realistically should take 45 minutes. When that book time says an hour and a half, a lot of people, they don't understand that, but it's learning the efficiency and how the other side of the back shop works is what I feel that a service advisor or manager would greatly need to learn.
So you're saying you got a heck of an advantage because you've been there before.
But also it could be a disadvantage.
Because you're assuming how quickly things will get done because I could do it in 45.
Right, exactly.
Right.
That's so true.
Were you ever in the shop, Rachel?
No.
Okay. And I know you got great history. You came on board the company, 8 years ago?
Yes.
And you did everything that Dan asked you to do?
Correct.
And now you're running the business.
Yes. I agree with you, Nick. At first, it was very difficult for me to understand book times and how that worked and how you got stuff done faster than that and the inner workings of it. I mean, for the most part, I've... over 8 years figured out, how long something realistically should take and how long my tech is going to take to do this job or that job, which is important. But sometimes there's always a wrench that you just don't expect and you can't account for it. You can't fix it. And
yep. That's so true.
Makes for a late night.
Especially in the salt belt.
Yep.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh boy.
You assume it's going to take about 20 minutes and then next thing you know, you see him wheeling the torches across the shop and you're like, well, I had 20 more minutes onto that job.
And you're not charging the customer. You're just realizing that your whole shop flow went out the door.
Yeah. You realize that the customer that's coming in 10 minutes is not going to get in with that technician. So now you need to shuffle things around.
Mm. Okay.
A disadvantage of being a former technician into a service writer or advisor is you overcomplicate things for somebody that has never turned a wrench in their life.
True.
And that could right there talk a customer out of purchasing a service rather than just explain it in a normal simplified way. You don't not necessarily dumb it down, you just simplify it.
How many times have you caught yourself doing that?
I've done it many times.
Many times. And do you just say, damn, why did I do that?
Yes. Yeah.
But you didn't learn from it. And oh my God, well, this valve's connected to this hose and then this hangs down over here. And people say, can you just fix my car?
Yeah. You're trying to explain exactly how a timing chain job is going to go from start to finish. You're like, wait a minute, you don't need to know all of this stuff because you can see their eyes getting bigger and bigger. You know what? You need this. So if
you're watching the customer and you know you're getting into that trap, do you just say, trust us?
No, you would simplify it. Just say,
okay.
Let's say if you need a radiator, but it's on an Acura, so you got to remove the whole front end.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, yeah, you're
not
exactly.
You're not going to tell them, well, I got to remove your bumper. I got to remove all this and that, and I got to remove your headlights. And, you know,
that reminds me, if you knew what an open heart surgery was like, you wouldn't have one.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true.
I think that's a big difference between Dan and I is he's very technical. Yeah. So he'll just right out of the gate. And especially if you tell a customer what's wrong and then they don't say anything, you start to get nervous and you just start rambling like why it's going to be so expensive. Like, well, you have to do this and this and this. And then they're even more confused now because you just told them how you're going to do a job they don't know anything about. I mean, a lot of people don't know anything about cars anymore.
That's absolutely true.
And they don't even want to know. They don't care. They just want it fixed.
Yep.
And sometimes you have to step back and be like, no, just stop talking. Stop saying stuff.
I mean, I love an educated customer.
Yes.
That will ask me and you know, if I don't know something, if it, you know, if it gets into, you know, if they want to get technical with it and I don't know, say if it's, you know, an electrical system that Rich, my head diagnostic guy, you know, I don't really understand 100% of what he's talking about. You can ask a customer, do you want me to bring Rich up and he'll just do a quick, you know, explanation? Rich will be more than happy to, but he'll probably lose them because he'll probably lost me too. But, you know, it's an educated customer is, in my opinion, the best customer. You know, they know what you're
That's
doing.
That's absolutely true.
Well, that goes to one of your points, Chris, and that is that we probably as an industry need to step up and do, and help the customer understand the technology that's going on inside their car and actually how it helps you drive today.
Absolutely. There's, and part of the biggest problem is there's so much misinformation out there and people have no problem finding misinformation, whether it be the internet, the dealers, the parts stores. You know, there's a lot of bad information out there. Somebody buys a car and they say, oh, you don't need to change the oil for 10,000 miles. Don't worry about it until the light comes on. Well, at 40,000 miles, when that comes in for an oil change, there's no oil on the dipstick and the timing chain's rattling. And they're like, well, they told me I didn't have to change the oil that often. Well, you still have to check it, you know, and that used to be a common practice. Everybody checked their own oil, checked their own tire pressures. And it's not just the younger generation. It's everyone that buys their car now. They don't.
Okay. I go to your shop. I take my cars. You know, I don't know. What's the average person have 2.2 cars, whatever the number is. And, my older one, I come around. You know, maybe however often is that I am. Did you ever stop? Did you ever go into a doctor's office and they give you that sheet that says, hey, we need a yearly update. What's going on with you? We'd like to know.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if all of a sudden I have a brand, hey, I bought a brand new car. Chris, you got to see this. Oh, let me talk to you about that.
Absolutely.
Isn't that the time?
That is. Unfortunately, when they buy it, a lot of the sales team don't tell you that sort of thing. They just, you know, don't worry about till the light comes on. Don't worry about this. Don't worry about that. And, you know, but the problem is they're doing timing chains on Equinoxes that are 2 years old, you know, because they're running out of oil. Toyota's having a problem with their cars running out of oil, but yet they're telling you not to change the oil. Yet they have a campaign for oil consumption problems.
Educate your customer.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean,
you have to.
It goes back to your point.
Yep.
And are we, and that's a great point about education, but recently talking to someone about all the tech on the technology on the car, and especially the you know, advanced driver assist systems, ADAS, and, you know, lane keep and blind spots. Do our customers really know how all of that stuff works?
Not at all.
No.
Have you ever found yourself explaining to the customers how it works?
Just recently, actually, we had an Impala with the blind spot detection on the driver's side stopped working, and the sensors in the bumper, and me and the lead tech actually sat down and did a bunch of research to find out how the system works and how to diagnose it, and then we looked into it, and it turns out the sensor is bad. So, but the car is just out of warranty, and the part is not available, and it's $1,200.
And it's got to be recalibrated.
Exactly. And a lot of shops don't have the ability to calibrate. We're lucky enough that we do pretty much anything domestic and a little bit of the foreign.
As a side note, I interviewed a shop owner, Matthew Royai from Katy, Texas, and he invested a ton of money in ADAS calibration. And you got to listen for this episode because it's very interesting to discover what Matthew has invested and his take on ADAS calibration and where that's going to go as a service someday inside of our industry. the tech that's on the car, do our customers care? Because if you spend some time talking to them, do they care? Do they feel good about, you know, they got that news from you?
Yeah. Yeah. Most of them are appreciative of the information. I mean, they came in with a problem. Here's what your problem is. Unfortunately, this is what it'll cost to repair. And that's usually where they're unhappy. And more often than not, they're upset with the manufacturer, not with you. And sometimes they'll actually take it up with the manufacturer. So, and a lot of times some of these cars have campaigns going on about it. We had a juke in yesterday, timing chain's rattling. There's actually a campaign where they're replacing those under an extended warranty. So we printed the technical service bulletin for the customer. We gave it to them and said, see if you can get this covered. If not, you need a timing chain, and this is what it will cost to have it done under your, you know, under your budget. Wow. So, and they were very appreciative because we gave them the information they needed, and we didn't try and sell them a job that they can get covered. Mm-hmm.
That adds a lot of value and trust. We had a customer with a brand new Malibu, broken piston, came in with a check engine light, and we're like, go to the dealer. You know, I hate to say that, but it's under warranty. It's got like 300 miles on it or something ridiculous. Oh, yeah. And he came back and like brought us all these gifts. He's like, thank you so much.
It's the right thing to do.
It is.
But there are shops that won't do that. And that's where you lose. That's where we get the bad reputation.
Wait a minute. 300 miles. The logic is it's under warranty.
You would assume there are a lot of customers that understand very little about that. And that's our job to teach them.
And also there's just the stigma of, I don't want to go there if I don't have to.
Big time, yeah.
And they'd rather pay us thinking, oh, it's just a check engine light. It's not a big deal. And, you know, I'm like, you really should at least go check.
I want to change the subject. I want to talk about female service advisors. When I came in today, I noticed three female service advisors here at Bison Automotive. And I talked to John about it. He says, I will have nothing but female service advisors on my counter from now on, he says. And since it's actually one out of three here in on my show, I should have had an all female. And one day we will do an all female service talk. How are you looking at the value that you bring as a female relating to your customer, Rachel?
I think for other females that are coming in with their vehicles, I mean, most of my customers are female. It creates a different relationship where they trust me because I'm not some sketchy looking guy walking in covered in grease telling them it's $1,000 to fix their car. But also I think they like that I know what I'm talking about.
Timeout, sketchy looking guy. And I'm looking at Nick and I'm
not
looking
them,
and I'm looking at Chris over here.
That other sketchy
it's
guy.
It's the stigma of a repair shop where, you know, it's a dirty place, and it's, you know, most of the places now, especially, you know, in the groups that we're in, everybody has nice shops. Everybody has professional looking people, but it doesn't make it less scary for people, like women or men, coming into a shop and they don't know anybody. It's a scary thing. So I think as a female, it's helpful because I know what I'm talking about. And they're like, wow, this isn't so scary or complicated. And I don't know. I just think that I have a good thing going with my customers.
It seems to be the trend.
I mean, I got a question for Rachel. I mean, does it ever, when you have a male customer come in, do you ever feel a difficulty maybe talking to him about his car?
There are a few. When I first started 8 years ago, nobody would talk to me. No one. Not a female, not a male. I'd answer the phone and I'd make a list of 1,000 messages for my boss. Now people are, I get a lot of, wow, you actually know what you're talking about. There's still a couple where they just flat out will not talk to me and, you know, get the owner. They'd rather talk to a technician than me. And techs aren't
and
really.
So they get the owner, and Dan comes in, and what does Dan say?
Dan says, "What did Rachel say?" You know, because that was the thing we had to work on very early on. Is I would tell a customer one thing, then they'd go ambush him, and he'd say something completely different. So we had to get on the same page where it was like, "Stop doing that. Stop saying something, just be like, what did Rachel say? Or come find me." You know, we have to be on the same page, and you're in the shop all day sometimes and you have no idea what my schedule looks like or how much anything costs. And that was something we really had to work on.
You have truly, you know, the torch has passed to you. I mean, you have it all.
It's important. I mean, especially in the summer when all the bay doors are open, a customer can bypass me completely in the office and go right into the shop and find who they want to talk to. And it's critical that everyone that's like my techs know, don't say anything, you know, right. Go talk to Rachel in the office. And Dan does that now too, where he's like, I have no idea. I've been out here all day. Go talk to Rachel. Well, Rachel says you can't do it till next week. Well, that's when I can do it.
that's one of the biggest hurdles as a service advisor is getting the owner to hand over the reins so that you and only you handle the schedule and things like that. Because when they start making appointments, that's usually when things go wrong.
Right.
Was that tough for you, Chris, you and Tom?
Yeah. When I first started with Tom, everybody wanted to talk to Tom because that's who they always talk to. That was the owner. And Tom has a lot of legacy customers. So they're people that know him, you know, have known him for years. So they want to talk to him. And eventually it flips over. Now they want to talk to you. Like,
did he have an advisor before you?
He did. He had a couple of different advisors. But people still just want to talk to the owner because they know him and they feel like, it's always cool when you know the guy that owns the place kind of thing. But, now people, you know, he'll pick up the phone and they'll ask for me. So,
right.
And that just happens over time. And that happened for you, you know, but it takes a while.
Yes.
Where do we find the best female service advisors? Is it, I hear a lot of people say, God, find a really great waitress. You got to write the right personality. We'll teach you the rest.
Not in the automotive industry. That's where you find the best service advisors.
Right.
Okay. I walked in not knowing really a whole lot of anything about cars.
What were you doing before?
I was actually in a call center for a storage facility. And then I left there and went to school full time.
Right.
I knew I had a basic knowledge of cars. My family's always been really into them. But I didn't really have any idea on the repair aspect and how much things cost. And that was a big hurdle for me to overcome is everything is very expensive.
Was it easy to learn when, you know, a technician would say, hey, well, this is how this part works and you picked it up?
Yeah.
Was it easy to explain?
And if I didn't know, I asked because I can't have a customer asking me, well, what does a tie rod do? And I can't answer that question because then I look like an idiot. So I was asking a million questions. I still ask questions if I don't have the answer. If I don't know how something works, I ask. So it's very important because you never know when you're going to get that customer that's like, well, why do I need to replace that? What's the importance of it?
Chris, Nick, your shop is growing and both Jeff, your boss, and Tom says we're going to add another service advisor because, you know, we're adding bays. We're doing some fun things. And he says, we're going to add a female. You guys cool?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm fine.
You know, I have a rare advantage. In my former life, I sold auto parts, and Amton Automotive was one of my customers.
No kidding.
And when you walk into the service, there's Rachel on the right and Dan on the left, and in the middle, you could almost see this border of order and chaos. And it was, I think, the biggest advantage for someone like Rachel, who's a multitasker, is you need, as a service advisor, to be able to think on your feet, juggle your tasks, and do more than one thing well in order to keep from going over to the chaos side. And then you have Dan's side, which is just this, it looks like a tornado has gone through his half of the desk. And then Rachel's got everything organized and planned out, and she's answering phones, and she's doing two or three things at a time. And that's something you have to be good at. You have to have that capability, even if you don't have the automotive knowledge. You can learn anything.
Yeah, I think being a female brings a different perspective into the business as well, where we've made a lot of changes. I'm very judgy. Like, I'll go into a place and be like, I drive by a repair shop, I'm like, I would never go there. I would never walk into that place because
you're just judging the book by its cover.
I am, but a lot of people do that.
Oh, absolutely.
And we've made a lot of changes physically to the appearance of the
shop. A lot of aesthetic choices, yeah.
Because and people will be like, wow, it looks so nice. It's just not what you expect when you go to a repair shop.
Like the bathroom?
Yeah. Yes.
There's a little bit of renovation to the Amton bathroom.
Maybe.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, I was out at your place, Chris. Mm-hmm. Nice job out there. Looks good. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. And I think a theme of service talk as we continue to move down and do more of these is to bring the woman perspective in. Which one of you said woman is the majority of my customers? Was it you, Nick? Mm-hmm. Was it you, Rachel?
Yeah.
And are you finding the same thing?
Absolutely.
You too, Nick?
I'd say it's a fairly 50-50 split with my customers. Okay. I have a lot of regulars that are female and a lot of regulars that are male. And I'd say it's right up about 50-50.
Okay. All right. You mentioned to me, Nick, you, as part of the service advisor role, you really have to learn to trust your techs.
Correct.
Being a former tech, talk to me about that.
A thing that I have is with my technicians now that I've been up front and managing the shop for just over a year and a half. The thing is I know when a technician brings me a work order with its recommendations or suggested services that need to be done, that I know that he's being truthful and honest about it. Because if they're trying to sell a service that's not true, they'd be out the door. Not just that though, is I know I can go out there and check that tie rod that he wrote down and it's going to be loose. And I do that. I go back there and I look at, I want to see what they're recommending. As they're writing it up, sometimes I'll look at a car with them if I got an extra few minutes on my hands. How I look at it is, how can I confidently present and advise a customer to service their car if I can't trust what my technicians wrote down or they recommended or suggested?
So you're looking to earn trust from them by double checking their...
I don't know necessarily about double checking. Sometimes I like to just go back there and see if they miss anything.
Mm-hmm, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, but I don't... With my technicians, then they know that I'm being truthful with my customers. They know the same thing.
Rachel, same thing. How about the technician trust piece?
It's very important. In the past, we've had technicians that if you don't trust them, then somebody's got to go double check every single thing they do. It wastes time. It wastes money. The relationship isn't good. You can't have that kind of environment. I think DVI eliminates a lot of that.
Yes.
Because there's picture proof of everything that they're saying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they say the rotors are rotted and falling off a car and they take a picture and they look fine, where'd you get that from? You know, I mean, the way we do things is you never want a customer to tell you no and then take it to another shop and have them say they were lying. So everything that you recommend has to be real. And, you know, I want to sleep at night too. So
documentation to me with DVI,
CYA,
is like, yeah, is so cool. How about you, technician trust?
Yeah, absolutely. And the DVI makes a big difference because if it goes in a chain. It goes from the technician taking a picture of a dirty air filter to me showing the customer without dragging them out into the shop. Hey, look, here's a picture of your dirty air filter. Would you like me to replace this? You know, especially like cabin air filters. You're breathing this in. Would you like me to make that not the case? You know, hey, while they're doing that, they're going to clear all the leaves off of the cowl and they take a picture of it. You know, the things that we don't even charge for, like taking leaves off the cowl where they're sitting there and rotting, things like that. Hey, we clean this off for you. Oh, thanks very much. You know, here's a picture of the tread depth gauge. Your tires are down to 4/32. We're going into winter time. If we get into the deep snow, it's probably not going to handle very well. Here's a recommendation for some tires, that sort of thing.
Well, look, I appreciate you guys being here live here. Really cool. Love this. Don't you love this room? That
one? Oh, yeah. This is fantastic.
This is the Studio South, or North for me. great to have you guys. Rachel Barraclo, Service Manager at Amton. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Chris Johnson, Service Manager at Total Automotive.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick Herberger, Service Manager at Scruggs Automotive.
Thank you.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having us.
You did great.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.